I'd like to acknowledge Australia's First Nation people as the traditional custodians of the land, and for this episode in particular, the Yugambeh people. I pay my respects to their elders past, present and emerging.
Their eyes lit up and said, "Oh, wow, this is a new experience. I didn't realize that within beer there were so many flavors as well." And once you get into that, just a whole new world opens up.
This is Over a Glass. I'm Shantae Whale.
Annalise Neskins operates Maddock Beer Brewing Company with her husband Jimmy in the Gold Coast of Queensland. The tale of this independent small brewery's creation is anything but ordinary. It's a story of yearning, passion and resilience. Annalise is here to tell me more. Hi Annalise, thanks for joining me.
Oh, good morning Shantae. Thank you very much for the invitation.
It's a total pleasure. I've long been a fan of your delicious brews. Now, I can hear a little bit of a Belgian accent, but I can definitely hear some Gold Coast in there too.
Well, that's good to hear. It's all about integration, so I do my best as well. We've only been to Australia. We only migrated to Australia 7.5 years ago. I've got my accent, but that's all good. I love it.
I think that the mix of accents we have in Australia is always a great talking point for, you know, when you meet someone for the first time, trying to figure out where they are and then learning more about them. You grew up in, as you say, the Disneyland of beer. What was it like growing up in Belgium?
Ooh, great question. Look, it is where you are born, that's where you live and that's where you experience the country and the culture and everything. So I never thought that I eventually would move to Australia when I was young. How is it like to be growing up in Belgium? It's a wonderful country with a lot of history, a lot of old buildings and everything. So it is like walking through a medieval town at any given time. And then Disneyland of beers. We were surrounded by beers left, right and center. So many bars, cafes, and then the breweries all producing so many different beers. Belgium has always been known as a great country when it comes to beer and beer culture. So yeah, it's a part of our DNA.
I can see that. And I'm glad that you mentioned not just that there's a lot of beer being made, but there is a real beer culture. Belgium has been making beer all the way back to the 6th century. And that history, you know, is not overwhelming, but awe-inspiring. When you were growing up, what was your mindset of beer? Did you try beer at an early age? What kind of role does it play as you're kind of growing up? Because in Australia, it is a little bit more that you kind of hate it up until a certain age, and then you go to your first party at probably 17, I'm not going to lie, and say 18, and then it's on your radar. But before then, it's that stuff that your father drinks that you think, oh, God, that's awful.
it's part of our DNA. It's part of the dinner table. It's part of going to friends and family. It's always there. Growing up, being a 15, 16-year-old, one, I have to state the legal drinking age for beer in Belgium, in most of the European countries, actually, it's still 16. I've got nothing against it because I believe at the age of 16, you still go out with your parents to the restaurant to go and visit friends and family. So you get your first beer amongst your parents and your aunties and uncles and everything. So it is more in a controlled manner than when you are 18. You do not want to go out with your parents anymore and you want to go out with your friends and get drunk. So it's more of a educational part, your journey of your first beers and everything. When did I drink my first beer? Must have been around the age of 15, 16 indeed. At the dinner table with the parents, having a Belgian wit beer. That was my first one, a Hoegaarden. And still to date, I really enjoy that beer as well.
I agree with you in that you see the beverage as part of the table, and rather than seeing it as this forbidden fruit that you need to experiment with, it's just another part of how we enjoy a meal together. And I actually really believe that that is a wonderful way to introduce a young mind into where beverages, you know, sit on a table. So I love that idea. Tell me a little bit about when Australia first came into your orbit. How did a country so far away, not in Europe, you know, when did that idea get floated?
From being at high school, and I had a friend of mine in another class that was going to do an exchange year to America. And that's where the ball started rolling. I wanted to do a similar experience, and I had chosen Australia, and I talked my parents into paying a high fee to send me overseas to live with a host family for 11 months. And I had chosen Australia because I do have relatives living up here. I have an uncle who has been living here for over 30 years already. So when you do make that move as an exchange student, my parents also believed it was very important to know that there was still some relative somewhere in the country. So I did an exchange year. I did my year 11 here in Australia in 97, and I spent a year in Mentone, Melbourne.
Ah, and it was Melbourne that the first place that you went to. How very interesting, because a very different culture, weather pattern than somewhere like the Gold Coast.
Yes, absolutely. But then moving further in life, when we finally decided to migrate to Australia, of course, we didn't want to have the same weather pattern as Belgium, because that was also one of the reasons why we left Belgium. So hence why we chose the Gold Coast, where one day is beautiful and the next day is just perfect.
Well, that's very true. Now, you weren't brewers back in Belgium. Where did you enjoyed beer, but when did it kind of first start that you thought perhaps that was something that you wanted to do as a career?
Well, first up, again, beer is in our DNA and everything. We always had a big love for Belgian beer. But indeed, we had a different company in Belgium. Myself and my husband, we've always worked together since day dot that we were a couple and grew our journey together. My husband, actually, he had a air conditioning business. So we've done that for 15 years. We started it from scratch. But with air conditioning, it's always, the people are always saying it's either too cold, too hot, it's leaking, it's not working, come and fix it now, why is your bill so high? So it wasn't really a rewarding thing, and nobody really acknowledges the well craftsmanship of placing an air conditioning in somebody's office, in somebody's living room, because nobody ever goes in and say, wow, the temperature up here is just awesome. Who installed that air conditioning? I want to know everything about that person. So it is true, isn't it?
I have to say, I haven't had air conditioning my whole life, and I've only recently got it with the purchase of my home, and I shout from the rooftops about the people that installed mine.
Awesome.
But I don't doubt that it may not have been rewarding as producing amazing beer for people.
Absolutely.
So tell me more about that.
So as I said, Jimmy and I, we've always worked together. So we do kind of everything together. We are 24/7 together, which is great. Wow. I still love him to bits. But we also, in our downtime, we brewed beer together in our garden shed, and we had friends that were brewing beer, and they introduced us into the home brewing. So we took up that skill as well, and we were just doing batches of beers in the garden house, and we've invited friends and everything. So it was just, again, part of DNA, part of culture, part of getting friends together, sitting at the dinner table and enjoying a good beer and everything. But then the plans of migrating to Australia came about, and we looked into, like, ourselves, are we going to go and do air conditioning again. We didn't really want to do that in an extremely warm country then, Gold Coast, to one where you would say, of course you have to go into air conditioning. But because we've done that already for 15 years, we really wanted to have, like, you follow your passion and your dreams and everything. So we looked into ourselves and thought, okay, what are we also good at? What do we really are passionate about and everything? And that was the beers that we saw that brings people together and had just that great community feeling and everything. And also, yeah, being Belgian beers, Disneyland of beers, and all that together, we decided actually to go back to school in Belgium to become professional brewers and then migrate to Australia to start up a brewery for the best beer drinkers in the world, because Australians per capita still drink more beers than we Belgians do.
I've seen that fact before, but it's hard to digest. You just think, that is, can that be true?
It now, is true.
Now, your experience of migrating wasn't so easy. You didn't just get on a plane and, you know, land in the Gold Coast. Tell me a little bit about that kind of migration and how it unfolded.
Well, as many migrants here in Australia are already aware of it, a lot of us have to go through a specific English test because English potentially is not your first language and everything. So we had to undergo a massive English test as well, and you have to have certain points in order to get permanent residency straight away. Well, unfortunately, my husband failed his English test, which led us to only be eligible for a temporary visa rather than a permanent visa straight away. So we had our hurdles up front, stating that, again, only a temporary visa where we were allowed into Australia for up to 4 years. And it had to be regional Queensland before we were eligible to apply for a permanent visa. Of course, there's always a division line between metropolitan and regional Queensland. And we actually chose ourselves to make it a little bit harder for ourselves and move actually towards the border between regional and metropolitan. So we had a little bit of implications with our visa that we had to be certain that everything that we did on a regular basis was within regional Queensland, in which we succeeded. But it meant that our business that we started, the brewery that we started, we had to do it from our residential home. So for 3 years, we had the smallest commercial brewery for Australia, running it out of a 36 square meter, just normal two-car house garage. And it was completely compliant with council and liquor license and everything. But that's where it all started.
Wow, a true garage operation. That's amazing. The conversation around neighborhood community often is that you know somebody that's got a little bit of a backdoor operation and doing a little bit of home brewing. This takes it to another level, but I can really see people getting on board and actually enjoying that kind of ruggedness at the start of your journey. How did that operation go? I mean, obviously it went pretty well considering where you are now.
It was great fun. It was indeed a little bit of the grit and everything as well, because it is very uncommon to have a proper commercial brewery out of a residential property. But it was definitely talks of the town. We had our garage door open Friday and Saturday afternoons where people could freely walk in and have a chat with us, try some samples, and then potentially walk away with a souvenir of their visit, as in a takeaway. But then one person that walked up our driveway from the street became two persons, became four persons, became 8, 16, and you can count on. And every Friday and Saturday afternoon, we were just busy in our tiny little garage. It was great fun. It was a great community feeling. We still have a lot of patrons that come into our brewery now that came from the garage. I have still customers that come in and say, I've been to your house. I've walked through your living room to go to the toilet. It's all those things. It's a great community, and we absolutely loved it. We are very appreciative of the way we started, how we did it and everything, the challenges that it took as well. But yeah, here we are now. We are 2 years and a half into our bigger premises with full taproom production facility and everything, and it's going good. Despite all the challenges that the craft beer industry is facing for the moment, I can touch wood and say we are doing okay.
Well, that's a relief to hear. I can imagine in your garage it must have been hard to sometimes get people to go home. They would have been having a great time enjoying beers and you know, that makes it a bit more difficult when you think, you know, I really need to make dinner and I need people to leave.
It even came up to the point that some of our customers saw that we were struggling, that they just washed up glasses for us in my kitchen whilst Jimmy and I were talking to other guests at that given point. So it's, look, we have made many friends out of that garage. This is what we also came for that community feeling. Beer is about making friends, sitting down, having a good conversation and sharing experiences and memories together. And that is what we try to pass on in our taproom here at Maddock as well. Having a good beer with a good conversation with your good friends.
I love that. That is, in essence, what it is all about. How did you find communicating about Belgian beer styles when you first arrived? Did you find that challenging? I mean, anyone that's traveled, you know, over to Belgium understands that, you know, you've just benefited from being close to Germany, you know, bordering France, being close to England. There's a reason why Belgian beer is at that mecca. But in terms of communicating about blondes and lambics and saisons, did you find that challenging at the start?
It is still challenging. We still get so many new customers in that come up to the bar and ask me, what IPAs do you have? What pale ales do you have? And yes, of course, we do accommodate to those people as well, because we have made sure that those people are well cared for as well at the start of their journey coming into the Maddock taproom. But we quickly try to communicate and educate them as well what Belgian beer is. We explain the story. We tell them that we are from Belgium and that we produce Belgian-style beers, and that it's not always about hop-driven beers where you find all those grapefruit and passion fruit and tropical fruit flavors. No, our Belgian beer, that goes back to the core, meaning true beer flavors driven by the yeast, driven by the malts that come back to the surface. And once we explain that to them and give them a tasting paddle with all the different beers and everything, we do take them on a journey. And you see their eyes lit up and say, oh, wow, this is a new experience. I didn't realize that within beer, there were so many flavors as well. And that is the same with wine. People think there is a white wine, a red wine, and a rosé. But within those three, there is such a variety as well of flavors. And once you get into that, just a whole new world opens up.
I completely agree. One of my early days was working in a kind of boutique beer and wine store, and I was allowed a staff drink at the end of every night, and I would try a different beer. And I couldn't believe just how satisfying, you know, those savory flavors that you talked about, and the malt and the hops and how they interact and remind me of, oh, goodness knows, you know, mushrooms and leaves, and I just thought, gosh, there's so much flavor in some of these exquisite beers, and potential alcohol a little bit higher, but that one drink was all I really needed, you know, and I really enjoyed that. But what was the first ever beer that you brewed? What was the first ever style when you first started out?
It must have been either our blonde or quadruple, which we still have on tap. Must have been one of those beers. I can't really remember. I really have to chase up that photograph that we took with our first customer to see what he has in his hands.
I can't. Oh. Yes. I would love to see that photo if you find it.
Yes, of course we got a photograph of that.
Now, in terms of when you now make Belgian-style beers, but you are making them in Australian market, you have a blonde beer, you have like a Trappist style in terms of you do a quadruple. You also have some beautiful fruit beers and saisons. Yep. What do you find is most popular? What do you find when someone walks in that really kind of captivates their attention and gets them interested in what you're doing?
Oh, definitely the true Belgian styles, like our quadruple that is still our signature beer. Of course, it's 9.5%. It's a strong dark ale. That goes, it's all year around on tap with us, except when we absolutely do run out of it. But we try to make sure that it is on tap all the time. Everybody loves that beer. But again, it's a 9.5%er. That is a beer and that you have to have in a good conversation. Sit down, relax, and just enjoy the moment with your friends. And we do tell that as well when we sell that beer over the bar. So that is definitely a very good example. The Reinhardt, a strong amber ale, 8.5% goes really well. So people do seek out those true typical Belgian style beers, higher alcohol most of the times. But on the other hand, we also have that spectrum of taproom drinkers that come in and absolutely love our blonde, which is then slightly lower in alcohol. It's 5.2%, but it's just such an all-rounder beer. Subtle hoppiness, subtle fruit flavors and everything. It's a true beer where the beer flavor comes back to the surface and everybody truly enjoys that.
I think what I really get from when I've tasted your beers, looked on your website, done a little bit more investigation into who you are, is I can see that culture, that Belgian beer culture, is very much a part of what you're offering to people that walk into your tap room, people that buy your drinks, is that it's a different experience of what we perhaps are used to in Australia. And I love that idea. I remember the first time I ever had, it would have been a Chimay, I imagine. But I remember sitting and taking some time to enjoy the beer. It wasn't a thirst quencher that I threw back and kind of, it really was something I pondered and I spent some time on. I think I had some mussels and frites or something with it. and I think that you're achieving that really well, which is a really special offering for the Australian market.
Oh, thank you for that. And I also believe that somehow it also shows in the branding, because I can tell you the logo, the name we had already, Madoc, that comes from us, that comes from Belgium. But the branding we actually developed here in Australia by an Australian brand manager. And when he presented it to us, honestly, myself, Jimmy and our children, we all looked at each other as in, but mate, you're not making something new. We've seen this logo before. We've seen this branding before. It is already in existence from a Belgian beer brand. So we were trying to find it on the internet, on Google, as in, no, we've seen this before. Whilst our branding manager was honestly saying, no, Annalise, no, Jimmy, I honestly completely made this myself. It's 100% my work and everything. And we just couldn't believe it until we realized that he made it so personal, so Belgian to us, with the font, with the colors. Everything just screamed Belgium, Madoc, Jimmy and Annalise, that we were like blown away by how he was able to capture that Belgian essence within that branding, the logo of Madoc.
I can completely see that, and I thought it's definitely something I noticed as well. I thought that really it has the essence of Belgium, there. And it looks like it's been established for a very long time, just like some of the Trappist monastery beers. Just explain a little bit, because I want people who are listening to learn a little bit about Belgian beers as well. Explain a little bit about the styles of double, triple and quadruple and where that kind of comes from.
Ah, that's again a great question. There are a few different theories behind it. First of all, in the words double, triple, quadruple, we do hear the terms times two, times three and times four. And it actually comes from the fact that to brew a double, to brew a triple and to brew a quadruple, you need two, three, four times the ingredients towards the same amount of water as you would normally brew a single then. So you add more malts, you so that you've got a bigger sugar content whilst doing the mashing and everything. So you create more sugary water that the yeast will then eat up all the sugars to convert in alcohol and CO2 and everything. Meaning that for a double, you've got way more flavor, way more body towards the beer. A triple, even more so. And a quadruple, that's the sum on it's got all the body, all the mouthfeel, but of course on a higher alcohol content. So that's the technical term behind it. We brew it with more ingredients to increase the body and the mouthfeel and also to increase the alcohol content. The practical way of thinking behind it is it comes back from medieval times where people could not really read or write. So the monks, they used to write two stripes on a barrel, three stripes on a barrel and four stripes on a barrel to indicate the strength of the beer. They knew that they had brewed it with more ingredients and everything, but for the audience, for the patrons, it was like, oh, give me a quadruple, the four stripes one, because I know that that is higher in alcohol content and it just got more flavor and body to it.
Mm. It's fascinating, isn't it? Because I've heard you speak before as well about where beer culture came in and why. And I think that, you know, it is an ancient beverage and perhaps the oldest beverage that is in existence, I think, that we have archaeological findings for. And when you have such passion and awe of the beverage, it does make you think about what was happening when the first beer was drunk and what temperature was it at and why. And I really love the story that your beers show. They take you on a journey, but they do make you think about, you know, where beer has come from and what purpose it served. And I remember you talking a little bit about the fact that, you know, water wasn't treated a long time ago. And so for instance of drinking beer was actually more of a safety concern, wasn't it?
Yes, absolutely. So again, medieval times and everything, water was very polluted in the European countries and such. And the monks knew that if they were to brew beer from that water, it actually purified the water because you had to boil it. So it became a clean drink, something that people could drink and not get sick from it. So the monks actually saved the people whilst brewing beer, and also made sure that a lot of people would still come to church for it.
Genius. Knew exactly what they were doing. I do want to finish on your tradition or your Belgian session ale. Another genius marketing, because you look at that packaging and think, oh, that seems kind of familiar, a bit Queensland-like, but then it... Tell me how the True Blue came about.
Well, of course, we are in Australia and for us, it's all about integration when you migrate to another country. For me, it's not that I want to stand here and wave with all my Belgian flags, hence why we do not have a lot of well, actually, we do not have the Belgian colors here in our tap room, nor in our branding. Some people say, Annelies, you have to put the Belgian flag on all your cans, but I'm not really doing that because it's all about integration. We are here in Australia to be part of this community as well. But it does say true blue Belgian tradition. Referring to one, the Belgian tradition, and secondly, to integrate. True blue is a typical Aussie saying, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah,
I
that's
love
where
that.
We come from.
I can really see that. And I saw that you have a red lager too, which I'm a huge fan of, so I'm very curious. But I think the beers are stunning. I think the idea, your personalities and who you are is really showcased well within them. And we're very lucky to have you here, and that, you know, that little exchange program made an effort, and now, you know, despite the hardships of getting here and getting settled, you're now here to stay, which is definitely of our benefit. Annelies, if you could drink three drinks for the rest of your life, just three drinks, you could change them tomorrow, what would they be today?
Oh, first up, beer, of course. Does it have to be in general, or do I have to specify a specific beer?
Nope, whatever you like.
Ooh, well, then for me it is beer, water and gin.
A gin drinker, interesting.
Yes, I do love a good gin as well.
Well, I think that they would keep you going, they'd keep you refreshed, and they'd also keep you very interested, especially if you're drinking your beers, that's for sure.
Oh, yeah, thank you. Well, beer, because, yes, we produce it and I truly have a love for beer. Water, because we just need to drink it, otherwise we do die. And then gin, yes. I just love Sunday afternoon, chilling out, feed up. I love a good gin with the right botanicals in that. So, yeah, those were my three choices.
I love it. It's been such a pleasure hearing more about you and getting to know you a bit further. I suppose keep on keeping on. It is a changing climate and there are the ups and the downs, but you've shown to be a resilient couple, especially working together 24/7. I don't know many people that could do that. So you're made of tougher stuff.
yes. We wake up with our work and we go to bed with our work.
Well, you're certainly hardworking. Annelies, thank you so much for joining me today. Everybody, get behind Maddock Brewing. They are an incredible brewery and they are really changing the way that we think about beer. So, Annelies, thank you so much for joining me. It's been a pleasure. Cheers to you.
Thank you.
This is Over a Glass. I'm Shantae Whale. Stay tuned for more stories from the world of wine and drinks. Listen in every Thursday on your podcast app. Follow us on Instagram at overaglasspod and contact us at overaglass@deepintheweeds.com.au.